so Preacher had heard, to abandon his wagons and transfer everything to pack animals. But these folks Preacher was guiding wasn't about to give up their possessions. It was all they had. Well, he thought with a sigh, he'd just have to find a way. That was all there was to it.
That's some fine-looking horse flesh there, Preacher,
Dupree said, inspecting the animals Preacher brought into the encampment. The rider decided to walk the rest of the way and just giving them to you, eh? Something like that, Preacher replied, giving Dupree back his hat and settling his own on his head. He took the plate of food handed to him by a settler woman and sat down on the ground to eat. Nobody asked him anything until he had finished filling his stomach. Mealtime was serious business, and there was no point in chit-chatting until the man was done eating. When he'd set his plate aside and hottened up his coffee, Preacher leaned back against a wagon wheel and told the others what had happened. "The wilderness is filling up with scalawags," Beartooth opined. "I knowed when town started up they'd be filling up with footpadders and back shooters and the like." "What towns?" Preacher asked.
"Over in Oregon and Washington Territory. Why, I seen one town this last trip had more than 24 buildings.
Dupree said one of them had a ladies' dress shop that was spelled with 2 P's.
"Why?"
"Damned if I know." Beartooth scratched his woolly head. "How many P's is it supposed to have?"
"Boys," Preacher said, "how in the hell are we going to get these wagons across the South Rim and over the Snake?"
"I talked to Tom Fitzpatrick not long ago," Dupree said. "He told me how he thought it could be done. He said Tom McKay had done it last year, but they had to leave the wagons at the Snake River Gorge. I think there's a way, but it's going to be a rough one."
"What happens when we reach the Dallas on the Columbia?" Beartooth asked.
"That is one evil place."
"We portage it," Preacher said.
"With the wagons?" Nighthawk broke his silence. "It's never been done."
"It's either that or float them," Preacher said.
"I reckon we could build rafts to ferry the people."
"With the wagons on them?" Nighthawk again spoke. He shook his head.
"Look," Dupree said, freshening his coffee. "Let's get these folks through the South Rim and out of the gorge first." He looked over at Preacher. Preacher nodded his head in agreement.
"We'll take her one day at a time. I don't know no other way to do it. Hell with it. I'm going to sleep."
"My God," Swift exclaimed, as he stood with Preacher and the other mountain men looking at the brutal terrain of the Snake's South Rim.
"Get the winch out," Preacher told the wagon master. "The heaviest ropes. We're going to be here for several days getting all these wagons across this mess. Get your strongest men to work the winch and put others unloading the wagons and toting the possessions up that trail. We ain't going to do it by standing here jawing. Let's get to work."
"How many of these steep, rocky trails lie ahead of us, Preacher?" Richard asked.
"Oh, about 1,000 or so," he replied, then walked off.
"And he ain't kidding," Dupree told the missionary.
"Just be glad some trappers found a way around Hell's Canyon," Preacher called over his shoulder.
Laughing, he walked on.
"What's that all about?" Swift asked.
"A place you don't even want to look at," Dupree said. "Let's get to work."
And work they did. It was either that or turn around and take the California Trail, which no one in the party wanted to do. Using ropes and muscle and winches and sometimes doubling the mules and oxen, one by one the wagons reached the summit of the peak, only to discover another seemingly insurmountable boulder-strewn steep mountain trail was what faced them. So they squared their shoulders, rubbed sore and aching muscles, and faced the task. The men and women worked all that day and managed to make 3 miles. Richard and Edmund had lost their city flabbiness. Their waists and hips were leaner, and their chests and arms and shoulders much more muscular. Now they didn't look so stupid strutting around in their buckskins. No one sang songs around the fires that night. Directly after supper, nearly everyone, except the sentries, rolled up in their blankets and were snoring in 2 minutes.
You gotta hand it to them, preacher,
Dupree said. If this bunch here is gonna be the breed coming from the east, we're gonna be all right, to my way of thinking. I'm right proud of these pilgrims.
Preacher nodded his head in agreement, but he was still deep in thought.
Spit it out, preacher, Beartooth said.
We're going over the Cascades, preacher said.
Nighthawk looked across the dying fire at the mountain man. Still got the fast water to cross.
Rafts. We'll take the wagons apart. I'm talking about right down to the box. We'll make the box waterproof with tarps and tallow. From this moment on, save the candle drippings. We'll use that to fill the small cracks and holes in the beds of the wagons. That way, should a raft get ripped apart, the wagon beds will still float.
You a genius, preacher, Dupree said. Hell, I'd have never thought of that. But why not just stay on the rafts and head on down to Columbia?
Bum Kelly and Red Hand, and them Warren Cayuses. We'd be sitting ducks above and around in the river.
Besides, if the Cayuses is up in arms, the snakes and others will be too.
I've made up my mind. We go over the Cascades.
It's a hard 250 miles through them mountains, Beartooth reminded his friend.
And nobody ever took no wagon train through them, neither, Dupree added.
Well, boys, Preacher said, standing up and stretching, the likes of us has been the first to do a lot of things. We've climbed up through mountain passes that no other white man ever done before us and gazed upon land that was wild and pure. We've seen the erupting steam holes in the high-up country, and we've crossed the wild deserts to the south of it. We've drunk our fill from cold, pure streams where no white man ever bellied down afore us. We're the ones who blazed the trails and forded the rivers and laid it all out and made it easier for them others we knowed would come a-snorting and a-blowing after we blazed the way. How many nights has we laid up in our buffalo robes whilst the snow blowed all around us and was the first white men to be sung to by the wolves and the coyotes? We were boys. Us. The very first mountain men. Nobody else excepting us. And there ain't never gonna be no one else like us. Bet on that. How can there be? We already done it. It was us who was the first to make friends with the Injuns, them that would let us, and the by God first to do near bouts everything else that's been done by white men out here. We was the first. So the way I look at it, well, hell, boys, this little adventure we looking at now won't be nothing compared to what already lays behind us.
Damned ain't that pretty, Dupree said. You sure do talk nice when you're a mind to do so.
Beartooth was so moved he wiped a tear from his eyes. Nighthawk grunted, getting to his feet to head for the bushes. Speaking of getting moved. 5.
He ain't coming back, Bum, Slug told the outlaw leader. And them Injuns is getting jumpy. They ain't liking moving so far out of their territory.
Bum nodded his head. He was rapidly getting a gutful of the mountain man called Preacher. But the thought of calling off the chase never entered his mind. He could not, however, afford to lose the support of Red Hand. Without Red Hand's braves, they would have no chance against the wagon train. Bum knew Slug was right. Rod was not coming back. But that didn't necessarily mean he was dead. He might have developed a yellow streak and went the other way rather than face Preacher alone. But Bum didn't think that was what happened. Rod just got careless, and Preacher finished him. Bum went to see Red Hand. He had been working out a plan in his mind, and now was the time to see if it would work. "I wouldn't blame you if you took your people and run back to the Port Neufs," Bum told the renegade. "That's a mighty mean man we're chasing. Lots of folks are scared of Preacher, so you take your boys and run away if you're a mind to." Redhand drew himself up tall and glowered at the outlaw. "Redhand does not run away from an enemy." The Blackfoot spoke the words contemptuously. "Why would you think I would even consider such a cowardly act?" "Well, I don't know. Just come to me, that's all. You getting so far away from home country, I reckon. And we ain't been doing so good again, Preacher." "You worry about the cowards among your own group," Red Hand told him. "And do not ever again question my courage or the bravery of my people." "Fine," Bum said, ducking his head to hide his smile. "That suits me, Red Hand." The Blackfoot stalked away, his back stiff from the insult against him. Bum went back to his own group. He squatted down by the fire and poured coffee. "How'd it go?" Beckman asked. "Red Hand wouldn't quit now, no matter what happens or how far we have to travel. He's in it all the way." "When do we hit the train?" "Between the Blues and the Wallowa. Right along the Powder. I'll toss it to Red Hand, and before it's over, he'll be thinking he suggested it." "Why don't we hit him on the Columbia?" Moses suggested. "You know they got to take the river." "Maybe not. Preacher ain't never done nothing the easy way, so I've been told. I got it in my mind that he's going to try to take them across the Cascades." "That'd be plumb stupid," Bull said. "Ain't nobody ever took no damn wagon across them mountains. Ain't nobody ever going to, neither." "I don't know of no one who ever tried it," Bum said. "But if anyone can do it, it'll be Preacher." "So when do we ride for the Blues?" "I'll give Red Hand an hour or so to get over his mad and talk to him. I imagine we'll pull out in the morning. We'll get there in plenty of time to lay out an ambush site and get all rested up." "I liked Rod," Keith said. "He was a good man." "Obviously not good enough," Seedy said.
The traveling got rougher for those in the wagon train. The terrain was terrible and the mosquitoes worse. Great thick hordes of them fell on the wagon train, and soon everybody was slapping and cussing and scratching from the bites. The weather was just as miserable as the terrain. One day it was 90 degrees, the next day it was cloudy and cold. Bands of Digger Indians would line up on either side of the trail to stand in silence and watch the wagon train. Many of them begged for food. "Don't give 'em nothing," Preacher warned the movers. "If you do, they'll wart you forever. Them's the sorriest tribe anywheres. They'll take crickets and roaches and make a stew of it. They eat rats and the like. Most disgusting bunch of people I ever met in all my days."
"But they're hungry," Penelope said.
"They won't do for themselves," Beartooth said. "They beg and steal. They'd rather starve than work. Ignore 'em, missy. They just ain't worth your pity." The wagon train rolled on, following the snake over rough and rocky ground. The wagon train stopped early that day due to several broken wheels. The ground was so rough, one woman fell off the seat and busted her head wide open. The wound was not serious, but like all head wounds, it bled freely for several minutes, giving the pilgrims a good stare. "Everybody off them wagons and walk," Preacher passed the word up and down the line.
"My wife is with child, sir," a mover yelled in defiance.
"Should have thought of that before you started, fool," Preacher muttered in disgust. They crossed Goose Creek the next day, straight up and straight down. Most movers lost articles out of their wagons. The ground was the worst they had experienced thus far. That night, Preacher told Swift and a few of the others, "We can expect trouble up ahead, place called Rocky Creek. It's about 20 miles from where we're camped. Since the first big band of movers come through last year, trouble-hunting Injuns have been hanging around there, and they're a mean bunch. Pass the word that nobody wanders off once we're there. When Swift was gone to pass the word, Preacher said to his friends, "We're going to push it tomorrow. We're going to put 15 miles behind us. That way we'll make Rocky Creek by mid-morning of the next day and put it behind us." "You figuring we'll have trouble there?" Trapper Jim asked.
"Yeah. Something's got these engines all stirred up. I don't want to camp nowhere near the creek."
"What kind of engines will these be?" Richard asked.
"Northern Paiute, probably. Maybe some Bannock. Ain't no telling, really. But a lot of them renegades and just plain trouble hunters. Renegades will put aside centuries-old tribal hatred and band together for protection."
Preacher refilled his cup and sat back down. It was a nice evening for a change. They were camped near a creek, and everybody had bathed and washed clothes and were lounging about simply relaxing after a grueling day on the trail. Kids were playing within the relatively safe confines of the circled wagons. Mothers kept a good eye on them nonetheless. The mountain men smiled and winked at one another. They alone knew that what they were doing had never been done before. A few wagon trains had punched through to the Columbia, for sure. But no one had ever taken a wagon train over the Cascades. These mountain men would be the first to do so. Something that mountain men enjoyed, being the first. "This is an excellent stretch of trail through here, Preacher," Swift remarked about noon of the next day. "I feel we could make better time."
"We could.
Then why aren't we?"
"I don't want us to have to camp on Rocky Creek, that's why. We'll do about 15 miles and then shut it down. That way we'll hit the creek and be long past it come time to circle for the night tomorrow.
I hardly think these savages would attack a train of this size," Swift persisted.
"I've had my say," Preacher told him, then lifted the reins and rode ahead.
"Damn idiots," Preacher muttered. "Can't see no further than the end of their noses." He wowed Hammer up short. Not 100 yards ahead, sitting smack in the middle of the trail, was a mother grizzly and 2 cubs. She had not yet caught his scent, and Preacher backed Hammer up and beat it to the train. "Hold it up," he told Swift, "and don't be tootin' on that damn bugle neither."
"What's the matter?"
"I said hold up the goddamn train." Clearly miffed, Swift rode back and stopped the long wagon train. Beartooth rode up.
"What's the matter?"
"Mama Grizz and 2 cubs sitting in the middle of the trail. She'll weigh a good 800-900 pounds. We'll let them alone and they'll move directly." Young Avery rode up on one of his father's horses.
"I'll go up and shoot her," he said.
"You'll do no such of a thing," Preacher told the hulking teenager. "Who'd care for them young ahern?" The man-child shrugged his shoulders.
"Who gives a hoot?"
"We do," Beartooth said.
"Learn this now, boy. You don't kill something for the sake of killing. You kill for survival or for food. You eat what you kill. You don't kill something just 'cause you..."
Avery sneered at the man and spurred his horse, heading at a gallop up the trail.
"Smart-mouthed little son of a bitch," Beartooth cussed the young man.
Preacher touched his moccasins to Hammer, and the big horse leaped forward, easily overtaking Avery. Preacher reached out and slapped the young man clean out of the saddle. Avery hit the ground and bounced on his butt a time or two.
"Pa!" he squalled.
"Get your butt in the saddle and get back to the train," Preacher told him.
"My pa whoop you,"
Avery said, climbing back into the saddle.
"Doubtful," Preacher told him.
"Move."
"I'm fixing to kill me a bear," Avery said. "And you can go to hell."
Preacher jumped his horse forward and knocked Avery out of the saddle with a hard right fist to the smart aleck's mouth. The blow was a brutal one, and it smashed lips and brought blood leaking down onto the young man's shirt. Beartooth galloped up at that point and settled a loop around Avery's shoulders just as he was getting to his feet. Beartooth jerked on the rope and Avery went down again.
Larn you some manners, Squirt, the burly mountain man said. He turned his horse and began dragging the youth back down the trail to the train. Preacher grabbed the horse's reins and led him along. Avery was cussing just like a full-grown man, which he very nearly was, and struggling to get to his feet. Every time he did, Beartooth would jerk on the rope and down he would go again. By the Lord, you'll pay dearly for this, Avery's pa, a man called Wade, yelled furiously upon witnessing his pride and joy being dragged down the trail at the end of a rope. Shut your trap or I'll dab a loop around your shoulders, Preacher told him. You step down from that horse and I'll give you a thrashing you're not likely to forget for the remainder of your days, the man said. Wah, Nighthawk shouted. There's to be a tussle, someone in the train yelled. You a damn fool, Dupree told the man. Preacher'll clean your plow for you can blink, Pilgrim. I fought Cornish all my days, the mover told him, as Preacher slowly dismounted. I'm not worried. Back away, mover, Preacher cautioned the man. Your boy got what he deserved and no more. It's nothing to be fighting about.
You and that snot son of yours have been nothing but trouble since Missouri, a woman yelled from the train. We should have voted to abandon you before reaching the Rockies.
A great majority of those gathered around loudly agreed with her statement. Avery's father was rolling up his shirt sleeves and flexing his muscles. He did a little footwork in the trail to limber up. Preacher was paying no attention to him. He had walked over to Swift to report what had taken place between Avery and the mountain men. Preacher, the wagon master said, you'd best be wary of the man. He's a rough fellow. He ran taverns back east. Is that right? What do you expect I best do? Run off somewheres and hide? The wagon master smiled. Look at him carefully, Preacher. The man's a brute. He's big and all right. I bet he'll make the ground tremble when he hits it. On his butt. My boy's been cut and bruised, Wade hollered. And he says you struck him in the mouth and face, Preacher. By the Lord, you'll pay for this. Turn and face me, Preacher. Receive your trashing like a man.
Hee-hee-hee, Beartooth giggled.
Pilgrim says he's gonna thrash you, Preacher. His one or two friends on the train says he's a mighty tough man. I'm afeard for your safety, Preacher. I just can't watch it, Dupree said. The sight of blood makes me dizzy-headed. Hell, that's your natural condition, Preacher told the Frenchman. Wade was drawing a line in the trail with the toe of his boot. Preacher watched the man, amusement in his eyes. Nighthawk was watching Wade, puzzlement in his dark eyes. White people sure did some odd things. Be you warned that to step across this line means you are ready for the fight, Wade said. Is that what it means? Preacher said with a laugh, as he took his pistols from the sash and handed them to Swift. Now I expect you're going to tell me the rules of this here fight. That is correct, sir, Wade said. Mr. Swift will keep the rules and shout out when to break. When to do what? Beartooth asked. To give a man time to recover from a knockdown, Wade told him. Each man will retire away from his opponent once the other man is down. The fight will continue until one man yields or is knocked unconscious. Is that the way they do it back east now? Preacher asked. That is correct. Now toe this line, Wade said. Yeah, Preacher, Dupree said. Step up here and receive your thrashing. Preacher suddenly screamed like a panther and leaped at the bigger man. One foot shot out and slammed against Wade's face, knocking the man down to the dirt. Preacher looked down at Wade, looking up at him, a startled expression on his face. Now, tell me again where it is I retire to, the mountain man asked. 6. Wade slowly got to his feet, an angry red splotch on the side of his face where Preacher had kicked him.
He was trembling with rage.
"You, sir, are no gentleman," he ground out. He lifted his fists and began dancing around.
"Oh, my," Preacher said. "Now I know what you want to do."
He jumped over, and before the mover could throw a punch, Preacher grabbed Wade's wrists in an iron vise.
Wade, red-faced in embarrassment, tried to break free. He could not break loose from Preacher's powerful grip.
Dupree, Nighthawk, Trapper Jim, and Beartooth began clapping their hands in unison as Preacher danced the man all around the trail.
"You dance good, Wade. This is fun. Somebody get us a fiddle and a squeeze box. Let's have us a party.
Circle round and dipsy-doo, up on your toes and turn real slow,"
Beartooth chanted.
"Twirl your partner around there twice, back again, and ain't that nice?"
"You goddamn heathen, unhand me," Wade bellered. He struggled in vain to break free of Preacher's grip. Dupree grabbed the first woman he spied and began dancing around the trail. Others soon joined in. Someone found a fiddle and another man took out a squeeze box. Still others began clapping their hands. Up the trail, the grizzly sow lifted her huge head and grunted at the strange sounds. She moved her cubs off the trail and into the timber and stashed them safely in thick brush. Then, Usris horribilis went lumbering down the trail to investigate the strange noises in her woods. All 900 pounds of her. Nighthawk was doing a little jig on the trail with several little boys and girls dancing with him. Richard and Edmund, while taught to mightily forbid dancing as the devil's own work, were getting into the action, patting their boots to the rhythm. Melody and Penelope were shaking various parts of their anatomy to the beat.
"Turn me loose and fight, you bastard," Wade shrieked.
"I'd rather dance," Preacher hollered. "Ain't this fun?"
"No," Wade screamed.
"Kick him, Pa," Avery yelled. "Trip him down on the ground."
The mover just couldn't resist the opportunity. He leaned out from his wagon seat and conked Avery on top of the head with the handle of his bullwhip. Addled to his toes, the rash young man sank to the ground, both his eyes crossed from the blow.
"Yee-haw!"
Preacher yelled, dancing around and around with his very reluctant partner. The grizzly sow reached the top of the hill and looked down at the goings-on below her. She had never seen anything like it. She wasn't afraid of it. It is not known whether grizzlies are afraid of anything, yet something in her brain told her that this should be avoided at all costs. But not before she told the strange animals below here that this was her territory, and to get the hell gone. She reared up, standing about 9 feet tall, and roared. Horses, mules, cows, dogs, sheep, oxen, goats, and about 40 cats panicked. The horses and mules reared up and fought their harnesses. The cow bellowed and squalled. The goats and sheep bleated. The dogs barked. The cats howled. The oxen did their best to turn the wagons around, right there in that narrow trail, and everything got all jumbled up. The grizzly sow took one more horrified look and ran at full speed back to her cubs. She gathered them up and headed for another more peaceful part of the timber. Preacher had danced Wade to just the right spot. He released the man and gave him a little shove. Wade went tumbling down the embankment and did a belly whopper in the Snake River. Preacher looked around him, found Avery, and jerked him up and tossed him over the side. Avery rolled down the hill and slammed into his father, just beginning his climb back up the embankment. Father and son went together into the Snake.
"You son of a bitch,"
Wade squalled at Preacher standing on the trail, laughing at them. It took the better part of an hour to get the livestock settled down and untangled. When Wade once more appeared in dry clothing and wanting to fight, Wagon Master Swift told him that if he threw down one more challenge, he'd tie him to a wagon wheel and deal out 20 lashes from his whip. He had the power to do just that.
and Wade knew it. Wade gave Preacher a dark look, which Preacher ignored, and returned to his wagon. Swift tooted on his bugle and the wagon train moved out, with everybody except Wade and Avery feeling better. Wade's long-suffering wife had to struggle to hide her smile. Preacher halted the wagon train about 5 miles from Rocky Creek. He ordered the sentries doubled and the wagons pulled in tight. Then he walked the circle of trains, visually inspecting each wagon. Get dead leaves and twigs and the like and scatter them in front of your wagons. Make it several feet wide and put them 3 or 4 yards out. You wake up with something crackling, shoot it, 'cause it ain't gonna be nobody friendly. I got me a feeling, Dupree said. Yeah, me too, Preacher agreed. I think we're gonna have trouble this night. Injuns is all turned every which away, Beartooth said. Snakes down in Ute country, Paiute moved up north, Blackfoot and Arapaho wandering around down here, Cayuse on the prowl. It don't make no sense to me. We seen some Hidatsa over west of here, whole bunch of them. Wasn't there Nighthawk? Too damn many, the crow said. And they weren't hunting food neither. I think they flee the fever back east. I keep hearing talk of an uprising, Preacher said, about tribes burying the hatchet and banding together. I reckon it's true. He leaned forward, cutting off a chunk of meat, fairly oozing with fat. Any dog soldiers with him? Couldn't tell for certain, Beartooth said. I hope not. I hate them damn contraries. The Hidatsa dog soldiers did everything backward. Hence, they were called contraries. But they were fierce fighters and much feared. A mover walked up and squatted down. I thought the wild red savages always beat on drums before they attacked. Dupree and Beartooth grinned. Nighthawk looked disgusted but said nothing. Some do back at the village, Preacher said. Before a fight, gets them all worked up into a lather. But I never seen no Injun toting no drum in battle a-whooping on it. Although if you was to tell a contrary he couldn't, he would. Preacher laughed. Wouldn't that be a sight to see? Thoroughly confused and really wanting to ask what in the world a contrary might be, the mover sighed and stood up, returning to his family. Very soon after supper was eaten and the dishes washed, the movers began settling down for sleep. Trapper Jim brought over a fresh pot of coffee, and the mountain men relaxed, drinking the hot, strong brew. When you think they'll hit us? Jim asked. You feel it too, huh? Dupree asked. Yeah, my guess is just as soon as the people get good sleep. I don't think they're going to wait too long. That's a good thought, Preacher said. We'll just drink this here coffee and then take up positions. Our backs is in pretty good shape, backed up to the bluffs. East is clear enough. West and south will be the way they'll hit us. He drained his cup. I reckon it's time to go to work. Preacher found Swift. Get the folks out of their blankets, he told them. We're fixing to get hit by Injuns. The wagon master cocked his head and listened for a moment. But I don't hear a thing, Preacher. That's right, Swift. You don't hear nothing. Now think about that. The two men stared at one another for a moment. Swift nodded his head. I'm learning, he told Preacher. Takes me a while, but I get there. Preacher clasped him on the shoulder. Good man. Now get them movers up and ready. I see something out there, a woman told Preacher as he walked by her wagon. Several somethings. They're not trying to hide. Preacher angled over to her and stood gazing out into the night. He called out in Snake. 1/3 of your horses and mules. The harsh voice came back to him, speaking in English. And 1/3 of all your supplies. Then you may pass through. Forget it, Preacher returned the shout. And don't tell me you're hungry. There's game aplenty out there this summer.
We ain't bothering you, so there ain't gonna be no tribute paid.
You will die then, all of you. Sing your death songs.
The Indians shouted out some very uncomplimentary and very uncomfortable suggestions to Preacher. Preacher heard Beartooth's laugh.
Your horse wouldn't like that either, Preacher.
You have that stinking, cowardly Crow-Puke Nighthawk with you, the Indian shouted.
That prompted a long stream of invectives from Nighthawk. He told the snake where to put his bow and arrows, his horse, his wife, his kids, his mother, his father, and all his friends.
Wah, Dupree said. Talk about a tight fit.
A bowstring twanged and the arrow thudded into the bed of a wagon near Preacher. The shapes that the woman had seen had long disappeared as the snakes prepared to attack.
Only cowards attack women and children, Beartooth shouted.
None of you are fit to be called braves. I say you is all stinking coyote vomit.
Bear killer will not die well, I am thinking. The snake's words came out of the darkness.
Preacher had hunkered down. His eyes had found a shape on the ground that was unnatural to the terrain. He lifted his hawken and sighted it in, squeezing the trigger. The powerful rifle boomed, and the shape lifted itself off the ground for a few seconds, then collapsed, shot through and through. Preacher quickly reloaded as arrows filled the night air. One mover screamed as an arrow embedded in his thigh. A child began crying, and its mother tried to soothe the child into silence with calming words. Nighthawk's rifle crashed, and another snake went down, shot through the stomach. The brave began screaming in pain as he rolled on the ground, his innards ruined.
If we can get three or four more,
Preacher told the man who crouched beside a wagon wheel,
them bucks'll break it off. I don't think there's many of them out there.
Preacher was thoughtful for a moment. Pass the word. Everyone with two rifles get ready to stand and deliver. We'll all fire at once. Engines is notional. That much firepower all at once might change their minds. Keep your second rifle at hand in case it just makes them mad and they charge. The mover looked at Preacher. Preacher shrugged his shoulders.
Life's full of chances.
Within 2 minutes' time, all the men were ready.
Now,
Preacher shouted, and the night roared and flashed with fire and smoke and lead balls. The movers were lucky this night. Their blind fire had hit several warriors. The Indians, never with enough ball or powder, figured that any group with so much shot and powder that they could waste it made their medicine very bad. Shouting threats and insults, they pulled back into the night. Nighthawk laid on the ground, his ear to the earth, and listened. They're riding away, he finally said, standing up. Heading south. That bunch is through for this night. The Preacher walked over to the man with an arrowhead sunk more than halfway through his thigh.
You got any drinking whiskey? He asked.
In the wagon, the mover said through gritted teeth.
Get it, Preacher told the man's wife.
The woman returned quickly with a jug of rye and handed it to Preacher.
Thank you kindly, ma'am, he said.
Preacher took him a long pull and then handed the jug to the wounded man.
I could say that this is going to hurt me worser than it does you, but I'd be lying.
You take your three or four good swallers and tell me when you're ready. The mover's Adam apple bobbed up and down as he swallowed the raw brew.
I'm ready.
Preacher nodded at Dupree and Beartooth, and the mountain men grabbed the mover's arms. Preacher got him a good grip on the shaft of the arrow and pushed hard. The man screamed as the arrow tore out the back of his leg. Preacher quickly broke off the shaft and pulled it out, then reached behind the man's leg and jerked out what remained. The mover had passed out. Preacher poured some whiskey on the wound, front and back, and told the woman,
Nighthawk'll take over now. Let him fix his potions and poultices and don't interfere. Engine's been using things like marigold and golden seal and dandelion and nip bone and others for centuries.
and they worked.
"What do you suggest for a bruise?" Edmund asked, pulling up his sleeve and showing a badly bruised arm.
"I won't ask how you got it. You pick you some bruise wort in the morning, that'll fix you right up."
"Some what?"
Preacher smiled. "Daisy flowers. Crush 'em up and lay 'em on the bruise. Works, old son. Picking handfuls of daisies on the banks of the Snake," Beartooth sang and did a little dance. "This and I don't like. That and I'll take."
Dupree looked at him.
"I swear you're too young to be getting senile. But you sure been acting goofy here late. Did you fall off your horse and bang your head?"
"Nope. I just feel good, that's all. And you best feel good, too. 'Cause when we cross the Snake in a week or so and start heading north, feel good time is gonna be over."
"I allow it's how you may be right." The two men linked arms and went off singing. "Picking daisies on the banks of the Snake. This and I don't like, that and I'll take."
Then the two mountain men did a little dance step and made up some lines that caused several of the women to squeal and cover their faces with their aprons. Nighthawk sighed and shook his head.
7. Preacher halted the train about a mile from Rocky Creek, and he and Dupree, Nighthawk, and Beartooth rode up to the crossing. No Indians were in sight, but the four of them knew that accounted for nothing in this country.
"Quiet," Preacher observed.
"But a peaceful kind of quiet."
"Right," Dupree said dryly. "Like that bird singing yonder that ain't no bird."
"I gleaned that right off," Beartooth said. "So they're waiting for us in them rocks over yonder across the creek. Now I consider that to be downright nasty, sneaky, unfriendly, and not at all to my liking."
"Yeah," Preacher said with a grin. "Not nothing like any of us would do."
"You got an idea," Beartooth said. "Every time you grin like that, I know you got something sneaky wiggling around inside your head bone."
"I do for a fact. Let's ride on back and get things set up. We'll give them renegades something them that lived through can tell their grandkids."
"Real easy-like and not in no hurry," Preacher told Swift. "I want you to pick out 12 of the best shots in the train and get them ready to load up. 6 in each wagon, 3 to a side. I want them to have at least 3 rifles loaded up and pistols at the ready. Beartooth and Nighthawk is on the south right now, checking to see if we're being spied on. Rig the canvas so it can be jerked up from the inside. Have Jim drive one wagon and a damn good man on the seat of the other. We're going to turn this ambush around." The warbling of a bird reached them. Preacher smiled. "That's Nighthawk telling me it's clear. When you get your men picked out, load everybody up on the south side of the wagons so's the engines won't see what's going on."
"Where will you be?" Swift asked.
"Me and Beartooth will be in front, Dupree and Nighthawk to the rear. What we'll do, you and me, is have a big argument on the banks with me yelling that we can only take 2 wagons across at a time. Then we'll move 'em out."
Swift looked doubtful.
"I hope this works," he finally said, with a shake of his head. Preacher grinned at him. "Me and Beartooth's gonna be in the front. What are you complaining about?"
Preacher walked back to where the 2 wagons were being prepared. With only the flaps facing southward lowered, men busied themselves offloading the wagon's contents, making room for the marksmen. The mountain men double-shotted their pistols and checked their rifles.
"Me and Nighthawk found signs that show some lazy butt diggers has joined this bunch," Beartooth said. "This bunch mostly is tribal cast-outs. For a digger to throw somebody out of the tribe means they really must have done something awful."
"I ain't never heard of a digger ever throwing nobody out," Dupree said. "Most of 'em's too damn lazy to take the time for a meeting."
Preacher told Swift, "Make your people ready for an attack.
We can't circle here, so keep everybody in the wagons, or right near them. Guns ready.
We're ready, Trapper Jim called.
Come on, Swift, Preacher said. Let's us walk down to the bank and have a quarrel.
The two men stood on the banks and shouted at each other for several minutes, with a lot of finger pointing at the other side of the creek. Finally, the wagon master threw up his hands and stalked off.
Bring 'em on, Preacher shouted. Beartooth, bring my horse down here, will you?
You think they bought it? Beartooth asked when Preacher had swung into the saddle.
I hope so. He cocked his hawken and Beartooth did the same.
We're going to have to fire these things like pistols, he told the big mountain man with a grin.
So get a good grip on yourn. I'd hate for you to lose it and you have to go wading in the creek after it. Your feet's so dirty the water'd be ruined for miles downstream.
Wah, Beartooth said. You ain't taken a bath in so long even the fleas is a-leaving you. I'd shove you off on your horse so the poor animal could take a decent breath. It's a wonder he ain't dropped stone dead from having to smell you.
They insulted each other while the wagons were lumbering down the trail to the creek.
I reckon we'll play this here game out like we see it once this we're crossed, Beartooth said. Watch your top knot if you leave the saddle, old son.
Same to you, Bear Killer.
Here they are. So here we go.
They stepped their horses into the creek and began the crossing, staying close to the first wagon driven by Trapper Jim. They felt the attack would begin as soon as the second wagon was fully out of the creek and past the top of the embankment. The renegade Indians would, in all likelihood, be content with slaughtering those in the two wagons, rather than face defeat or taking heavy losses by waiting until the entire train was over.
In the rocks left and right, Beartooth whispered. Unless a rock is taken to growing a hand.
Yep, that's a careless engine. Tell you what, just as soon as the last wagon's crossed, we kick these hammerheads into a gallop and get past them boulders. I'll swing left and you swing right. That's the side your furthest leg is on, he added with a grin, and we'll come up behind 'em.
I would tell you to keep low in the saddle, Beartooth responded with a smile. But you so damn scrawny and poor as it is, if an engine gets an arrow in you, it'll be pure luck. Never seen a man afore that has to stand in the same spot twice as to make a shatter.
Don't worry none about taking no arrow points, Beartooth. They so much lard and blubber on you, it won't do no damage to amount to much.
They stepped their horses onto the bank and started up the slight incline.
The only place Beartooth might take an arrow is in his butt. Trapper Jim called. Way it hangs out over the sides of that saddle makes a right tempting target.
I don't know why I associate with the likes of you people, Beartooth said. Way you continue to heap insults upon the poor head of this humble child of God.
Wah, Preacher said, then spat. You bring it all on yourself. Any man who'd winter with the squaw as ugly as that female you took up with back in 31 is beyond redemption. I thought you'd took up with a bear first time I come up on you, too. What was her name? She who frightens the sun?
Beartooth grinned.
She cooked good. It was right cozy in the robes, though.
I expect she were that.
Course you had to kill 9 deer to get enough skins for her dress. First time that woman reared up in front of me, I jumped 10 feet in the air. I thought it done come up on a Sasquatch.
I allow as to how she were a queen compared to that Assiniboine you took for a bride back in 28.
I had to marry up with her, Preacher said. It was either that or they was going to kill me. I'm telling you, her father was desperate to get shut of that girl. He didn't name her squalls a lot for nothing. First time she hollered at me, the whole damn teepee fell down.
The second wagon reached the crest of the bank, and Preacher let out a wild whoop, and Hammer took off like he'd been shot out of a cannon. Preacher cut left, and Beartooth cut to the right, just as the rocks on both sides of the trail were suddenly swarming with rogue Indians. The canvas on the wagons was jerked off,
and the riflemen inside leveled their weapons and cut loose with a volley. These Indians never had a chance. Taken completely by surprise, they were cut down, and their blood began staining the rocks and boulders by the creek. Preacher left his horse and slammed into a buck, knocking him to the ground. He sprang to his feet with a knife in one hand and a pistol in the other. Preacher shot him at nearly point-blank range with the hawken, and the ball passed right through him, the impact knocking the brave off his moccasins. Preacher used his rifle like a club, cracking the skull of a buck who came screaming at him. Dropping the hawken, Preacher jerked out two pistols, double-shot it as usual, and took two more out with him. The balls doing fearful damage to the braves. A brave jumped at Beartooth, and the huge man grabbed him by the neck and hurled him against a boulder, breaking the warrior's back with a horrible cracking sound. Nighthawk turned as a renegade Sauk, identified by his distinctive necklace of grizzly bear claws, cursed Nighthawk for a mangy crow dog. Many of his tribe had been pushed west by the ever-moving and encroaching whites. Nighthawk lifted a pistol and drilled the Sauk through the heart, then ran to help his friend Dupree, who was struggling with two Indians who wore Sioux markings. Nighthawk clubbed one with the butt of his pistol, smashing the man's skull. Dupree threw the other one to the ground and shot him in the head. Trapper Jim had left his wagon seat, a pistol in each hand, and two dead Indians lay at his feet. "It's over," Preacher shouted. "Stop firing, it's over." Men coughed nervously and rubbed at eyes that watered and smarted from the thick gray smoke from their black powder weapons. The mountain men went about the grisly task of finishing off those warriors who were badly wounded. "Stay in the wagons," Preacher told the movers. "This ain't nothing you need to get involved in. It's just something that has to be done. Reload all your weapons. That'll give you something to do." He shook his head, but he was proud of the movers. They had conducted themselves well. Nighthawk knelt down beside a badly wounded, gut-shot cayuse and spoke in his own language. "You are dying. Do you want me to hasten death?" "I want you to do nothing, Crow Puke," the defiant warrior told him, "except leave so I do not have to look upon your stupid, ugly face. I do not want that to be the last thing I see in this life." Nighthawk rose. "Then I shall certainly abide by your wishes, cayuse vulture shit." He walked away, leaving the buck to die alone. "You ever see so many damn tribes in one spot?" Dupree asked, as the mountain men met back on the trail. "I counted 8 tribes. There's a dead Cree over yonder." "Worries me," Preacher admitted, as Swift yelled from the other side. "When do we cross?" the wagon master yelled. "Bring 'em on over," Trapper Jim shouted, waving at the man. He climbed back on the seat and pulled his wagon on ahead, the second wagon following. "Worries you?" Nighthawk said, pointing to a dead Indian. "That's a Crow over there. I knew him as a good man. It's hard for me to believe that a Crow would join up with such a band of puke and maggots." The men gathered their horses and got off the trail as the wagon train began its crossing of the creek. No one asked if the mountain men were going to bury the dead Indians. By now they knew they would not. But they did help drag them out of sight so the women folk wouldn't have to look at the mangled and bloody bodies. The wagons lumbered across slowly, the creek crossing going well until a wheel came off and dumped some of the wagon's contents into the now muddy water. "Don't try to drive them wagons around it," Preacher hollered out the warning. "There's rocks on one side and a drop-off on the other." "Rig a skid," Swift shouted. "Help her down here, boys. Let's step lively now." Melody walked her horse across the creek to sit side saddle and watch the proceedings. She wrinkled her little nose at the smell of death that hung heavily around the ambush site and very pointedly ignored Preacher. "That woman wants to share her blankets with you, Preacher," Dupree said. "She's a looker," Beartooth said.
I'd sooner bet down with a coyote, Preacher said. I done told that woman 15 times to leave me be. It's like trying to get shed of a hungry bear when you're toting fresh-killed meat. Why don't you bet her down and then just ride off? Dupree suggested. If I done that, she'd be following me around forever, toting a bedroll. I can just see it now. All the rest of my days, I'd have this female following me across the plains and the mountains. No matter where I might wander, she'd be right behind me calling out, "Come back, preacher. Preacher, come back." Lord, I'd be the laughing stock of the West. He shook his head as his friends broke out in laughter. Melody cut her eyes to the group of mountain men, unaware of the Indian who was only a few yards from her. He had not moved during the ambush. He lay between a rock and a small bush. He was one with the earth, conspicuous to anyone who might glance his way and actually see what lay before them. But the Indian knew that while whites look at many things, most of them actually see very little. All around him, movers strained and grunted and swore as they finally got the wagon with the broken wheel out of the creek and up the grade. No one saw the lone brave. He was going to die, and he knew it. It didn't matter. He had sung his death song hours before. He moved only his eyes as he planned out his final few minutes on this earth. Up swiftly, one short jump, and the honey-haired woman on the horse would be dead. No matter if the others killed him. That was not important. But the horse didn't like the strange scent in his nostrils. He kept fighting the bit, wanting to leave this place. The smell of the warrior making him nervous. Preacher looked at the skittish horse, wondering if there was a snake over there. Something was sure making that horse nervous. Melody was having a hard time controlling the animal, and Preacher knew she was a good horsewoman. Something was very wrong. He left the group and walked toward Melody, reflex making him cock the hawken as he walked. The Indian sensed it was now or never. He knew the legendary mountain man called Preacher, and he was proud that it would be a mighty warrior who killed him. That was good. The mountain men would tell the story and Indians would hear it. Songs would be sung about how he died. He made his move, springing off of the earth and leaped toward Melody, a war axe in one hand, ready to bash her brains out. The horse walled its eyes and trembled, then reared up in fright, took one big jump, and Melody fell off the side saddle rig and hit the ground, landing on her butt in a sprawl and in a cloud of dust. She cut her eyes, saw the Indian in midair, and let out a shriek that was startlingly close to the sounds that squalls a lot used to make. Preacher coolly lifted the hawken one-handed and fired it like a pistol, the heavy ball striking the warrior just under his throat and tearing out his back. The ball seemed to stop the warrior in mid-flight. He did not utter a sound. He was dead when he hit the earth. Melody jumped up, ran to Preacher, and flung her arms around his neck.
"My hero," she said,
then passed out cold. "Oh, Lord," Preacher said, "I ain't never gonna get shed of this female." 8. Preacher handed Melody over to a gaggle of females and retreated back to his horse.
"Preacher, come back,"
he heard Melody call weakly. "Hell, it started already," he muttered, and put Hammer into a trot. Beartooth climbed into the saddle and rode out after him, catching up with him about a half mile from the creek. "You're a marked man, Preacher," he told him. "I hear wedding bells in your future. What you're hearing is your dried-up brains rattling against each other. We'll come see you from time to time." The mountain man wasn't about to let up. "See how you're getting on, having to live with walls all around you." "You best build you a wall around that mouth of yourn," Preacher told him. But he knew the ribbon was far from over. The boys hadn't even got started yet. Preacher knew he was in for it now. He cut his horse toward a stand of timber. This looks like a good spot to light and sit and have some coffee. It'll take them movers hours to get across that creek and this far. I'll start a fire and boil some coffee, Beartooth offered. You best go over that little puddle yonder and wash your face and hands and slick back that shaggy mane of yourn. Your lady love will be along shortly. Preacher told him where to go, how to get there, and what to do when he arrived.
Wah, Beartooth said with a laugh. That sure would be uncomfortable riding.
Speaking of riding, here comes them two Bible-thumping friends of yourn.
I say, Edmund said, dismounting, we've taken a vote and decided to rename the creek back there.
Is that right? Beartooth asked, unable to get the grin off his bearded face.
Yes, Richard said. We are going to erect a sign and call it Hero Creek, in honor of Preacher.
Have mercy, Beartooth said. Hero Creek. You hear that, Preacher?
Preacher muttered under his breath.
What's that you say, Preacher? Beartooth pressed.
I said I ain't no goddamn hero. That's what I said.
Oh, but I say, Preacher, you are indeed. Why, Miss Melody would have been killed if it were not for your brave and heroic actions and quick thinking, Edmund said.
Beartooth rocked back and forth in front of the small fire.
He cackled.
Genuine hero. That's what we got in our midst, yes sirree. I'd be a frontiersman like Dupree read to me about. And you'd be a hero. Lord, what a pair.
He howled with laughter and rolled around and around on the ground.
I fail to see the humor in this, Richard said. I must admit I am at a loss.
Preacher looked at the two Easterners. How to tell them that what happened not an hour past was something that occurred with almost monotonous regularity in the wilderness. It became a hard fact of life that had to be faced. No one thought anything about heroics.
Preacher shook his head.
Richard, you and Edmund ride back to the wagons and guide them to this spot right here.
Richard stuck out his chest.
It would be an honor, sir. Come, Edmund.
They ran for their horses.
I bet he gets some loss tween thar and here, Beartooth opined.
I don't hardly see how he could. The trail's 15 feet wide and a blind man could follow it.
Signs, he said with a long smile. He's got Jim and Dupree and Nighthawk to sort of help him along.
We're going to be crossing the Snake in about 3-4 more days, Preacher. You been giving that any thought?
A lot of thought. There's wagons that crossed it, but not very many, and not with the water so high. I'm thinking we're going to have to raft and rope. And pray, if you're of a mind to.
Beartooth grinned.
Oh, everything'll be all right, Preacher.
Beartooth noticed Preacher's hand inching toward a rock and got ready to jump.
I just know it will, since we got us a hero along.
Preacher hurled the rock and Beartooth jumped, but he was just a tad too late. The rock caught him smack in the ass and Beartooth howled like a mad puma. Then he rolled to his feet and chased the much smaller and much more agile Preacher all over the place until finally Beartooth collapsed on the ground.
Ox, Preacher said, falling down beside him and relaxing on the cool ground, shaded by the stand of timber.
You and Gray Bull getting to be about the same size.
Fat.
I ain't neither fat. I'm stocky built and have lots of muscles, that's all.
Between your ears, mostly.
Preacher,
I ain't moved.
It ain't never gonna be like it was before, is it?
Preacher was silent for a moment. With a heart that was heavy, he said,
No, it ain't, Bear. That's over.
Or will be soon.
It's our fault. We done it.
How you mean?
Beartooth rolled over and up on one elbow.
Don't fall on me, you moose. You'll squash me flat as a flapjack.
How do I mean?
Hell, we're the ones who trapped out all the streams, ain't we? Just to satisfy some fancy lady or foppish man back east.
We talked about it for lots of times, but we kept on doing it. We ain't got no one to blame but ourselves.
as far as the fur, that is. The people coming out here like swarms of locusts. Well, that was bound to happen. We're a nation of movers, I reckon. And I opine we ain't seen nothing yet. There'll be towns a-springing up right and left, and folks a-building fences and roads and damming up creeks and rivers. Why, you know what Richard told me? He said that folks has dug a big wide ditch. A canal, he called it, that's 350 miles long and filled the damn thing up with water so's people can float boats on it. Beartooth reared up and blocked out the light. Preacher rolled out of the way. He's lying to you, Preacher. Ain't nobody that damn stupid. He ain't lying neither. They call it the Erie Canal, and it cost millions and millions of dollars to build. Who paid for it? Well, I don't know. The government, I reckon. Where'd they get the money? Do I look like a damn professor? How should I know? Life's getting too complicated for me, Preacher. Beartooth flopped back down and the ground trembled for a moment. I think I'll just find me a good woman who can put up with me. Build me a little cabin in the mountains and retire. You ain't a-gonna do no such of a thing, and you know it. Neither am I. We're gonna be riding the mountains till the day we die. Gray Bull's a-scouting for the army. I heard tell that Pew was hanging on, trying to make a living trapping up north of here. Him and Lobo and Deadlead. Thumb's Carol is somewhere on the Platte. I don't know where Powder Pete in Tennessee and Matt and Naughty is. I thought Lobo was living with a pack of wolves that he adopted, or they adopted him. He goes back to him from time to time. He tried to teach one to talk for 5 years. I think he finally gave up on that. Wolf hiked his leg and pissed all over him. That'd be discouraging, I reckon. The group rolled on without further mishap. The only adventure they encountered was the daily grind of surviving the oftentimes monotonous trek westward. The second day after the failed Indian ambush at Rocky Creek, the train rattled and lumbered over 22 miles of trail. It was the most they'd ever done in one day on the Oregon Trail. The next several days were also uneventful. The following day would not prove to be so peaceful. They had to cross the Snake. The mountain men stood on the south side of the river, gazing across its rushing waters to the north bank. "Here's where we test the metal," Dupree said. "It ain't as bad as I've seen it," Preacher said. "The islands is visible, and they're big enough to hold wagons to rest. I reckon a far-thinking man could make some money by operating a ferry here." Within a few years, someone would. "Well, let's get rope strung and start getting the people across," Beartooth said. "I'm just hoping we don't lose nobody here. If we do, maybe it'll be that damn Avery," Dupree said. "But I don't figure we'll be that lucky." He'd been caught spying on ladies as they went to the bushes. Swift had warned the young man's father that if it happened again, he was going to lash his son. The father had said that would be done only over his dead body. "That can be arranged," Preacher told the man. They lost the first wagon that attempted to cross. Currents grabbed it and carried it downstream, smashing it against rocks. The team was saved and most of the possessions had been offloaded. "We got two of the wheels," Preacher told the devastated man and woman. "We can build you a cart and travois." "A what?" the woman asked. "I'll show you